Joining me now for a closer look at the equity space is Nessie Chetty from Momentum Investments. Nessie, thanks so much for joining us today. So yesterday we had sentiment supportive of the local bourse, and that after reports that Trump's tariffs were facing opposition from the Republican Party. Local GDP numbers for 2017 also encouraging, and a day later, look how quickly things have shifted.
Yeah, Alicia, it's certainly been a roller coaster the last 2 days. I mean, our market had an artificial bounce yesterday from the positive GDP print. I think a lot of people were surprised at the quantum of that in the fourth quarter. If you turn your attention to the U.S., I mean, we had the resignation of Gary Cohn, who's the White House economic advisor, and I think some of that was expected. He was very against tariff measures in the U.S. economy. Trump is pushing quite aggressively for tariff measures across not just various industries but also commodities as well. What's being speculated now in the market is that steel and aluminium are the big two commodities potentially that will attract a tariff, and these are big industries as well. A lot of the tariff measures still being focused exclusively on Chinese investments or imports into the U.S., which could have knock-on effects if there is some retaliation-type measures from some of the U.S.'s trading partners. Our economy, you saw it, the financials down, Aussie down. I mean, it was basically the industrials that were up. On the S&P, basically the markets were up from the Caterpillar and Boeing's, which were dragged down.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at ripple effects off all of this, you know, the resignation also going to be denting any market confidence there was in, the U.S., the new U.S. or the current U.S. administration at this point when it comes to any matter from here on out.
Yeah, look, there's quite a bit of uncertainty in terms of future policy measures, but there's also the operating environment where you're starting to see interest rates will start to go up. Potentially from a market point of view, we are looking for economic data to come out on Friday. You've got a monthly payroll print that will come out. That will give more indications in terms of the pedestrian type growth of the U.S. economy. To that impact, I mean, it's still predominantly a weak dollar. Our currency did depreciate slightly against the pound and the dollar as well.
Yeah. Looking at some company news out today, we've had a few company results filtering through. Let's take a look at MMI Holdings, because the company's announced that it's not going to be paying a dividend. So you can see this more conservative approach coming to the fore despite this brightened outlook for the economy. Locally, what have you made of MMI's numbers?
Yeah, so like life insurance companies are a bit of an anomaly. They need to hold a certain amount of, let's call it, regulatory capital through the cycle. In terms of the modeling by the company for the regulatory framework in with regard to solvency and assessment management, which is effectively SAM, they've taken the decision that the 1.5 to 1.7 times cover that they historically had wouldn't be prudent given their growth initiatives, the deployment of capital into various business structures, and also the level of capital that they need to sustain a dividend payout in the future. I think given where the share is trading relative to the embedded value, it is a deep discount. So potentially a share buyback in that context makes sense. You're buying around 2 billion of shares for an embedded value that's probably 2.5 billion. So you're getting that embedded value uplift in year one or two, and that's effectively the cap where they can buy shares. Other than the share buyback program, I mean, the rest of the businesses, you are starting to see flow and momentum. From a persistency side, you did have weaker persistency at Metropolitan Retail, and also weaker profitability on Mom Retail because of legacy products in there as well. This was offset to some extent by better mortality and morbidity, which is coming through now. What's interestingly is in a tough economic environment where I think the savings pool is dwindling and every life insurance company is competing for that same pie, you're actually seeing value of new business, which was effectively flat over the period at a similar margin. So that's quite incredible that they're able to maintain that.
Absolutely. Okay, so that one company that's doing something with its money, let's take a look at Anglo American, because it's also buying back $1.2 billion of its near-term bonds, so showing just how it's using its cash holdings in order to strengthen its balance sheet, and we've already seen the kind of stride Anglo American has made in this regard.
Yeah, I think the operating pricing environment for commodity companies starting to improve slightly. So Mark Kutifani made the point that, you know, on a 3 to 6 month view, given that, you know, the charter will be finalized, outlook starting to look slightly better, and then they can model a lot better. Commodity companies, mining companies, typically very cyclical. So in a downturn, I mean, when prices are falling, commodity prices are falling, you need that buffer in terms of a strong balance sheet. Effectively, they're buying back a chunk of their bonds, which are expensive, and using that out of cash or retained earnings. Mm-hmm. What you will find is with most companies that they try and manage that capital structure to ensure that, you know, when you have a recovering commodity price, that they're able to ramp up. And there's sufficient capital deployment into the underlying plants and entities.
Yeah. Of course, when it comes to the bottom performer on the top 40 index today, Tiger Brands still under pressure, down close enough to 1% by the close. On the top end, though, resilient amongst the lot, it trading 2.5% higher. There was some news out that it's sold... It's restructured. Cromwell. So let's take a look at what's played out there.
Yeah, so there were two announcements. I mean, the first one was Resilient. I mean, they announced the restructure of the Siaka Trust. This was something the market was expecting. The initial structure was that, I mean, Siaka held both Resilient and Fortress shares. Mm-hmm. Effectively, given the decline in the share prices, the liabilities exceeded the assets. The new structure now, where effectively the Siaka Trust now becomes a Resilient Trust and has just that shares, the Resilient shares, makes sense. It to the effect that they'll only service the interest where there's effectively the dividend meets the interest expense over that period. What you will find is, even with the restructure of the entities in there, that the loan to value, the gearing of the companies is still low. So both Resilient and Fortress will still have gearing at a very manageable level at about 35%. There is a small impact in distribution, but I think if you take a 3-year view, the run rate in distribution is still quite healthy for Resilient and Fortress, and given where the yields are now, still very cheap.
Yeah, that's not your stock pick at the moment, though. Your stock pick does emanate from the property space, so talk us through that very quickly.
Yeah, so basically in terms of positioning, I mean, MAS is a company we've liked for a while. We think the extent of rand appreciation is probably overdone. It's one that's trading on a 7% yield, and that's in euros. So for us, very attractive. Potentially in a rand weakening environment, you'll see some of that value come through. Quality of assets, very good. I mean, they're transitioning their portfolio from about Western Europe, which is developed markets, so moving from expensive economies into ones where they see value. They're able to do developments at a yield of about 9% with strong distribution for the next 2 years of about 20% growth in euros in distributions.
Okay, so that one to watch. Let's leave it there, Nessie. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Nessie Chetty is with Momentum Investments. Sluggish sales in South Africa and a shortage of raw material used to make plastic bottles were amongst the factors to have hit Packaging Group Impact in its full year to December. While revenue remained flat at just over 10 billion rand, underlying operating profit tumbled 41%, and with that, the company posted a 32% drop in its headline earnings per share to 164.5 cents. Earlier today, I caught up with CEO Bruce Strong and asked just how hard lower demand for plastic and paper has hit the business.
2017 was no doubt one of our most difficult years, if not the most difficult year, certainly since our listing in 2011. It was attributable to a number of factors, some of which you've mentioned. I mean, shortages of raw material are difficult. Then we had, of course, the very steep rise in the price of recovered paper. Mm-hmm. And that was a consequence of something that caught the world by surprise, and that was China banning imports of certain grades of paper into China, which meant that the demand from countries like South Africa, which have very clean grades of recovered paper, suddenly spiked. So we saw input costs there going up by more than 30%, while the global prices went up more than 60%. And it's very difficult to recover that cost increase through your selling prices. If you couple with that the subdued demand and the drought in key fruit growing areas for us, being the Eastern and Western Cape, it was unfortunately a year where a number of things came together which didn't help us. Having said that, you know, we did make good progress in a number of strategic investments that we've made across the business. One being the commissioning of our Felixton paper mill, which was an 800 odd million rand project. completed middle part of, of last year, and a new automated warehouse which was completed at the end of last year. We've installed a new injection molly machine for making jumbo bins. We've just commissioned a brand new corrugator in Port Elizabeth. So, you know, while 2017 was a year to forget from a financial performance point of view, it will be a year to remember from what we've done in the business to ensure a sustained earnings growth in future.
Let's take a look at that CapEx spend that you are making. I mean, do current conditions justify the kind of spend being made?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's one thing about South Africa. People have been relatively pessimistic over the past years, and we've also been affected in many respects by the general economy and things like that. But there's no doubt that there is an economy here that's worth investing in, and we've consistently invested over the last 7 or 8 years, to the point now where we've come to the end of a comprehensive investment cycle. The benefit of having invested over the last 7 or 8 years is the average rand price that we've paid for our capital equipment has been relatively good. If you take the exchange rate over that period, it's been quite strong. So, you know, I think the benefits that will show from that are going to be realized in the forthcoming years as the economy picks up, as people are more confident, and I think the recent changes in the socio-political environment should help, and I think things are pretty optimistic.
I ask the question because while the argument is that you have to take advantage of you have to invest to take advantage of the upswing when it does kick in the interim you sit, one would assume, with idle capacity that comes at a cost.
Well, I wouldn't say it's necessarily idle capacity because most of the areas we've invested in, we have got secure markets already. And where we don't have it in the domestic market, we've been able to export, albeit at, in some cases, not optimal margins, although those will be optimized over time. But that is what's required to really develop your business. You know, at the end of the day, if you take packaging, there's a big drive globally to reduce packaging. That requires lighter weight packaging. And you can't make lighter weight packaging if you don't invest to do that. And so we're looking at our customers. And our business is always focusing on what does a customer need today, but as importantly, what are the customers going to need in the future? And the one thing they need is lighter weight packaging with the same strength characteristics, the same quality characteristics, and you're not going to deliver that if you haven't been investing. And so I think while 2017 is certainly a year to forget, as I've already mentioned, I mean, looking forward, Impact is very well positioned to capture a lot of growth in the future because South African companies will continue to do business.
Having said that, how much risk do you price in with the water shortages that could hit industrial and agricultural output even further, because that's likely to maintain the kind of pressure you've seen on your fruit packaging volume. So how do you start to mitigate against a risk like that?
Yeah, so that's something obviously we've been spending a fair amount of time and energy on over the past years. The one thing that remains is that there is uncertainty around what will happen in the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape. What we can do as a business is, one, ensure we've got processed water to run our plants, to ensure the safety and well-being of our staff and their families, you know, through providing potable water, reducing water. We've reduced 59% consumption versus a 2015 baseline, which I think is a very commendable achievement under the circumstances. And we are continuing to focus on things like energy and other aspects of the business to ensure sustainability, not only through the drought, but in future. The one thing that the drought brings and the troubles that those bring, that brings, is the opportunity to look at your business with different eyes and say, where else could we be exploiting these savings opportunities? You know, if you think in businesses that have run in the mill over the last 10 years and you're saving water like above 50%, that's never mind the water saving, which has obvious benefits in the environment. Just the cost savings that you'll find across your business once you start applying this, I think it shows that we as South Africans have got a lot of opportunity to save. We're not going to save our way out of the crisis necessarily. We've got to provide bulk provision and things like that in those regions. But it does give us a chance, a fighting chance. The other thing that one should bear in mind in fruit growing regions, you're dealing with customers. Our fruit customers are the most resilient group of people you'll ever come across. You know, most of them have been in their businesses 4 and 5 generations. They see droughts every 7 years. This one is by all accounts a very severe one. But they are very resourceful, so there will be an impact on volumes. But I don't think you're saying goodbye to a sector. I think you're seeing the resilience of South Africans, and particularly fruit farmers who have shown their mettle many times over.
Well, opportunistically speaking then, to what extent do you enjoy the upside of greater demand on the consumer side, with demand for bottled water, for one thing, on the bearing in mind that it was a shortage of the raw material used to make plastic bottles that hurt your earnings?
Yeah, well, I think there's no doubt that bottled water consumption will increase over the coming period. That has to be offset against the effects of sugar tax on carbonated soft drinks on that end. A lot has been said about the bottled water and what happens to the bottles. Well, I'm pleased to say that Impact is recycling PET bottles. You know, we had a couple of challenges, and we still do have challenges in bringing our recycled PET plant up to speed. But, the bottled water consumption does create more volume in terms of available for recycling, and that also feeds into our business, so we'd benefit from that.
That was Bruce Strong, CEO of Impact. After the break, Bronwyn and the Deutsche Welle team in Frankfurt round up some of the international news-making headlines today, including the trade war fears being refueled by a resignation in the White House. So stay tuned. Welcome back. Well, the case for a global markets rally just got murkier with the President Donald Trump's economic advisor calling it quits. So let's cross to Bronwyn now, who's standing by with more on that and other international news making headlines today. That's with the Deutsche Welle team in Frankfurt. Bronwyn.
Thanks, Alicia. Well, America's trade policy remains firmly in the spotlight, particularly now that Gary Cohn, the White House's chief economic advisor, and a free trade advocate has resigned. To further unpack what markets are making of this developing story, let's cross to Ulrich Bass from Deutsche Welle, who's standing by at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. Ulrich, analysts are saying that markets viewed Cohn as a voice of reason on trade policy. And now with the news of his exit, markets are once again nervous about the implications of the US's protectionist policies.
That's right. Here in Germany, the DAX is gaining, but most everything else is on its way down. Car shares within the German market are down. Volkswagen and Daimler in particular. BMW has recovered a little. But when you look at the broader picture, Wall Street was not looking all that good. And also, the dollar was down. The euro was up when you compare it to yesterday. And the uncertainty over a possible trade war also hit the oil price. Oil is going down because if this thing escalates, if there is indeed a trade conflict, and people assume it would not be just limited to the United States and Europe or Germany, but would spread to other trading partners as well, as these things can do if they get out of control. And remember, the EU is threatening with counter-sanctions, with counter-tariffs, if the United States begins, so investors still are nervous.
Adding to that picture of global policy uncertainty is Brexit as well. We've had the CEO of French carmaker PSA say that the company needs to make a decision on the future of Vauxhall's plant in Northern England, but it's reluctant to do so because there needs to be more clarity on Brexit. So what are the ramifications of putting these plans on hold? Because are we likely to get any more clarity on Brexit in the next few months?
No. No one really sees that with the positions in the EU and in London being what they are. And what does this mean for Ellesmere Port, for example, that factory with 1,800 workers that Carlos Tavares was talking about? It means that if an investment decision, and he's talking about a huge investment decision, is not made anytime soon, then it becomes less competitive. It can't expand. And oftentimes in these really, really difficult, tough times, that means either in or out, that could mean closure.
On the flip side, though, some companies aren't waiting for Brexit clarity before they make their moves. Goldman Sachs being the latest to tell London staff that there will be a move to Frankfurt. This must be good news for you on your end, Ulrich.
It is, but there are two sides to that coin. It's great news for the city, for the governments, for the banking community, for the stock market here. It all makes Frankfurt more important and adds to the growth of the financial community and to the prestige. Goldman Sachs is said to give notice to a good dozen of its employees to move to Frankfurt by June. That's a very quick decision. Goldman Sachs, a prestigious firm. But the other side of the coin is the Frankfurt people, for example, I associate with here in my spare time, or who I meet on the street, they're afraid that their rents or house prices, if they want to buy something, will go up with increasing demand from overseas. The level here being paid by normal people is nowhere near what Londoners are prepared to pay. So one fears that the prices could go up with good earning bankers coming here.
Ulrich, we'll have to see how that all plays out, but we'll have to leave it there for today. Ulrich Bartz is from Deutsche Welle, and that's a wrap of your global news headlines. It's back to you, Alicia.
Thanks, Bronwyn, and that's where I leave things with you for this hour. After the break, though, it's Stephen and Narina taking a broader look at the world of exchange-traded funds on ETF investors. So do stay tuned for that. I'll see you back at 7 o'clock, where we discuss the ANC's plans to retable a parliamentary motion to nationalize the South African Reserve Bank. That's with Professor Yanni Rousseau from WITS. We also take a look at just how much of an impact U.S. President Donald Trump's tariff war will have on South Africa and its metals industry. So that's what's coming your way. Do stay tuned for that. Throwing forward to tomorrow, though, tune in at 8 a.m. to catch the live broadcast of Sanlam's full year results, and then at 10 a.m. it's Standard Bank as well. Your stock pick does emanate from the property space, so talk us through that very quickly.
Yeah, so basically in terms of positioning, I mean, MAS is a company we've liked for a while. We think the extent of rand appreciation probably overdone. It's one that's trading on a 7% yield, and that's in euros. So for us, very attractive. Potentially in a rand weakening environment, you'll see some of that value come through. Quality of assets, very good. I mean, they're transitioning their portfolio from about Western Europe, which is developed markets, so moving from expensive economies into ones where they see value. They're able to do developments at a yield of about 9%, with strong distribution for the next 2 years of about 20% growth in euros in distributions.
Okay, so that one to watch. Let's leave it there, Nessie. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Nessie Chetty is with Momentum Investments.